This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Corn futures have now closed higher for 6 consecutive weeks. Beans for 5 consecutive weeks. Wow. It's an impressive run we've got going on in those markets. Wheat posted gains this week, and livestock futures were higher today, but lower on the week. How much of the new data we got on Tuesday has been digested by the markets?
Live from the land where we scoop ice cream with a shovel via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Brian Doherty from TFM by Stuart Peterson. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, stay away from the lemon-flavored snow cones.
Eh?
Okay?
Oh, the lemon. See, shoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was staying away from the grape. Doggone it.
Oh.
I felt like something was amiss, you know? Well, because the guy was giving them away for free. I was like, wow. Free snow
cones? Yeah, of course he was.
Yeah.
Give me two. I'll have one of those.
Yeah.
Free, can't afford not to. Oh man, here we are. This was a long week, man. This
it
was
felt
a
like
long
it.
Week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
With everything that is happening and trying to keep up with a rapid speed on the news cycle coming out of Washington D.C. I mean, Davis, how do you keep up with what's coming out of EPA regarding the RFS and SREs alone?
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely amazing. I mean, we get the word from Reuters yesterday that, hey, some of these 2019 waiver requests are going to be granted. As a matter of fact, most of them are going to be granted. And then we get the Federal Register published, and the EPA says, you know what, we're going to wait for the Supreme Court to take that up before we make a decision on the 2019 waiver request.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
It's just kind of a flip and a flop going on. Corn market, trying to figure all that out with what it means for total use in the year ahead. It's not easy right now, dude. It's not easy.
Here's how I visualize that, you know, the whole thing. And really the news in general this week, the last few weeks, it's as though you took a case of ping pong balls and just dropped them from the ceiling on a gym floor. You know, that's news. That's how the news is coming these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
And so you try to grab one, you know, some of them you step on and you crush in half, and you know, there's so many, you really don't mind.
Right. Right. Oh, did we mention yet that, President Trump was impeached again this week?
I think it came up once or twice, maybe.
Yeah. I think it might have. Just absolutely fascinating what that is going to mean for President Biden's first 30 days, incoming President Biden's first 30 days. You wonder what Mitch McConnell's planning with a trial, with the impeachment trial. Is the Senate going to look to convict or acquit? What's going to happen? Will they even have a trial? Man, oh man, we've got an inauguration next week, and there are more U.S. troops, Army Reserve, on the ground in downtown Washington, D.C. than at any other time. It's just, you wonder about the times that we're in, but hey, you know, I'm going to go back to a comment from Jim Bauer that he made on Wednesday. Just keep looking at these markets. And the markets will give you the bottom line. And so far, even with the Dow lower today, 125 points lower right now, the markets are generally saying, listen, we've got all this figured out. Let's just keep marching forward. Everything's going to be okay. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
It is. I like that. We'll keep marching forward. That's what we'll do.
Love it. Let's get to the news. What you got?
Wheat trade was volatile as markets tried to digest news that Russia will take steps to restrict exports. March SRW futures were within a dime of $7 in the overnight session after it was learned Russia will place a duty equal to $1.65 per bushel on wheat exports beginning March 1. That bigger-than-expected tax will remain in place until June 30. The plan is still to ramp up to that duty. Starting February 15, an initial tax at half that rate will be tacked on to wheat prices. Market watchers generally agree the Russian tax scheme is essentially a ban on wheat exports starting within 30 to 45 days. March HRW wheat gained 6.5 cents, 6.43. March soft red gained 5.5 cents to close at 6.75.5. March spring wheat was 0.25 cent lower,
wow.
6.40 1/4. So they're artificially basically just pricing it out of the market. Is that is that basically what we're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is exactly what they're doing. They're not going to let the market do its job. They're going to do the preemptively do the market's job for it rather than allowing wheat prices to rise on their own. So on the week, March SRW wheat futures up 36.75 cents. March hard red futures up 48.25 cents. And the March spring wheat contract up 30.5 cents. Get this. March HRW wheat futures up 8.11% on the week was the biggest percentage gainer on the week. And that's with some huge gains in corn.
Well, bear spreaders were active in the corn market today with nearby contract months lower and back month futures slightly higher. March corn futures stopped 0.25 cents short of a full test of resistance at yesterday's high. The contract also continued to attract buying interest on a test of support near 5.30. The result was an inside day with a low range close in March corn. USDA this morning announced the sale of 111,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to Mexico in the current marketing year. Traders generally agree Tuesday's updates to the supply and demand tables drove home the need to slow the usage pace of corn in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. March corn futures 2.75 cents lower, 5.31.5. May corn slipped 3 cents, 5.34 3/4. July, 5.32, down 2 3/4. Chip.
On the week, March corn up 35.25 cents. That's 7.1%. July corn up 37.25 cents. That's up 7.53%. Huge move in the corn market this week.
USDA, ahead of the open, announced the sale of 318,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations in the current marketing year. And while traders agree the market's primary responsibility right now is to slow down the usage pace, the sale failed to provide support for bean futures. Rains in Argentina put some pressure on prices, but the forecast calls for another extended period of hot and dry conditions in the country's primary growing regions. Heavy pressure on Malaysian palm oil prices pulled U.S. bean oil futures lower today. March bean futures have failed to push through resistance at Wednesday's high of 14.36.5 in each of the last two sessions, triggering a round of profit-taking to end the week. Traders also said the active bear spreading in the market today was most likely driven by position evening. March bean futures 13.75 cents lower, 14.16 3/4. May beans fell 13 cents to 14.14 3/4. July bean futures closed at 14.01, down 12.25 cents. Well, it turns out beans can go down. Chip?
Yeah, on the week, March soybeans up 42 cents, July soybeans up 43 cents. So some big moves there.
Well, surprisingly, cotton futures gave back a chunk of the gains posted Tuesday after USDA cut nearly 1 million bales from the 2020 cotton crop estimate. Front month cotton futures posted an inside trading day with a low range close, but the contract stayed well above support at yesterday's low throughout the session. March cotton 45 points lower, 80.70. July cotton dropped 38 points to 82.37. Chip.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Let's get to the livestock trade when we get to the next segment here. Cotton futures on the week up 93 ticks. I had so much hopes for big, big, big gains in that cotton market this week. Solid gains, but not a runaway. Real quick on the new crop corn to soybean price ratio, we're right at 2.6. We'll find out what Brian Doherty from TFM by Stuart Peterson thinks about that corn soybean price ratio next here on AgriTalk. Cheap herbicides may sound like a bargain, but they can turn out to cost more than a grower might think. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is with us. Steve, why should growers focus more on what they risk losing than the dollars saved?
Well, Chip, it seems counterintuitive, but spending less money can actually cost growers more. The hits come from two sides. First, think about the front end, because if the herbicide is ineffective, they'll spend more money on another application. It'll likely have been less expensive to put down the single application of the effective herbicide to begin with. We see this all the time. And then on the back end, they may be costing themselves yield. Effective herbicides wipe out weeds fast, allowing the crop to grow with as little competition as possible. If you use an ineffective herbicide and your fields are littered with weeds at harvest, you're costing yourself yield and money.
Absolutely. Steve, what are the key considerations that will help us in selecting an effective herbicide?
Well, when it comes to selecting a herbicide program, look at the big picture. Choosing a herbicide with residual control and multiple effective sites of action will save weed management headaches down the road, and the right herbicide program can even pay back in yield.
Okay, so how can growers get into a cost per bushel mindset to make the right decision?
Well, less weed competition translates into more nutrients, sunlight, and water available for the growing corn crop, which leads to more bushels and extra revenue potential. So it's important to think about the cost per bushel. If the herbicide is a cheaper option but doesn't deliver the performance that maximizes yield, that cost per bushel will likely be higher overall. And if it's a product that delivers leading performance and drives higher yields, that cost per bushel will be lower overall. So it's important to not only think about cost per acre, but what is the return for that cost as well. And so if you think about 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron, you're looking at some pretty big ROI potential.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right mindset to have right there. Thank you, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jeff Flory. I got Davis Michelson with me. We're getting ready to have a conversation with Brian Doherty from TFM by Stuart Peterson. Before we do that, though, Davis, let's go ahead and get that livestock news in there.
Well, Chip, even with boxed beef prices trading higher earlier this week, cash cattle bids weakened throughout the week, limiting buying interest in live cattle futures ahead of today's round of short covering. Feeder cattle futures were sharply higher today, but ended below last Friday's close due to rising feed costs.
Yeah.
February live cattle were 70 cents higher, 112.77 and one half. April cattle jumped 97 and one half cents to 118.20, and March feeders were 245 higher, 135.82 and a half. USDA's updated forecast that 2021 pork exports will decline 1.9% from last year was a source of pressure on lean hog prices until today's week-ending round of short covering. February lean hogs were $1.62 and a half higher, 67.92 and a half. April hogs firmed 57 and one half to 72.65.
All right,
Chip, I think the last time that you and me and Brian Doherty were all in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
I think we all got the walleye. I think we were all sitting there eating walleye, thinking how smart we were. I think that's what
I
we were doing.
I think that might be right. I think that might be exactly right.
Don't you?
Brian Doherty,
it's
TFM,
been a while.
Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. I think we were having the walleye, Brian.
I think it was a fillet of fish, but...
Yeah.
We called it walleye.
Happy New Year. Yes, happy New Year to you too, Brian. Thank you. How's it treating you so far?
Good. No complaints. We like for our grain producers to see some good run in the market, and we've gotten that. But, I kind of want to add or inject some humor somewhere, and I can't really turn any direction and inject anything. Everything's so sensitive and messy and whatnot right now, but hopefully we get through it and move on, and the markets sure have been kind of marching on, so maybe a good segue into what we got going. I heard you mention about the stocks of usage there. I'm sorry, not stocks of usage, the ratio, November beans divided by December corn, 2.6. Yeah, interesting figure.
Yeah. The battle... See, I look at what happened to the spreads today with the bear spreads, the way that they were working. I mean, old crop corn contracts lower, new crop corn contracts higher, basically the same story in soybeans. It almost feels like the 2021 crop contracts following the USDA reports that we got on Tuesday, woke up to the fact that, hey, we're going to have to scramble to make sure we get enough acres for the 2021 crops.
Yeah, and that'll be the debate that really starts to hit pretty hard. Now, it'd be interesting if your readers responded. I've kind of contended this. I push back against that 2.60 a little bit as not perhaps maybe having as much meaning as when prices are low and you're looking to save costs, and you'll probably go with that ratio around 2.45, 2.5, pushing to bean acres, a less expensive crop.
Gotcha.
As December corn rallies, I'm beginning to think the ratio may have less impact, and it's more about revenue per acre and price.
Yep.
And frankly, I think they like the dependability and rather would probably produce corn.
Yeah.
Than soybeans in a one-on-one. So I don't know if that's really going to have a big impact or not, but it sure has been moving straight upward all fall into winter here, and it's just an indicator of a market that is trying to find soybean supply.
Right.
And it's trying to encourage it here in the U.S., and the market, as a lot of people will argue, hey, the market knows. The market knows it needs supply.
Yeah. Yep. You know, as long as we're talking about some of the subtleties, because I love what you just said there about the ratio. Does it matter? Sure, it might. But revenue, that's what matters the most. And if you're looking at 460 D's futures at 200 or 200 bushel, hey, that's a pretty good revenue number that you're looking at right there. November beans, $12 beans, okay. The potential is there. But you know what there's more potential for? Is if you can get some beans put in the ground early, some shorter season beans, and sell them against that September contract that's 50 cents higher, 55, 60 cents higher than the November contract. I think there's going to be some of that shifting going on too, isn't there, Brian?
There always is. When
yeah.
there's opportunity, people scramble. People look there for opportunity to either lock profit, lock an advantage in, so you absolutely will see that too. The other thing you might see too is because of where beans and or corn is priced, and you look at the drought monitor map, and I just have a hunch when wheat starts to break dormancy, if it doesn't look really like outstanding, I think it gets tore up pretty quick and maybe moves to corn or beans. So I think both corn and beans might find some acres from wheat, and I think that as time unfolds here, we'll have a little better picture of that. The exception to that rule, all of a sudden, if wheat prices decide that they want to take their turn at leading and move up, especially in light of the news today in Russia,
yeah.
Now we've got a couple months where supplies may get tight and wheat might try and buy acres.
Yep. Yeah. I've been wondering if we were going to see that happen, and it felt like it was happening for a little bit. I'm not too sure if we're there yet. Still got some room to go. You know, and the other crop that we got to throw into your comments, I think, anyway, about that wheat crop, if it doesn't look really good when it's coming up, they might tear it up and go to something else. We could just see a bunch of milo or sorghum go in the ground, and that's going to add to our feed grain supply, but it might be a little deceiving, because if you're not adding it in corn acres, it may not be as negative as what it really is because of the increase in the feed grain supply.
You bet. Yeah, and that's, there's so many dynamics this year that we could look at it from so many angles.
Yeah.
I think if we come kind of circle back to the basics, though, and I think the bottom line numbers is we take a look at carryout numbers and are they getting bigger or smaller? Well, they got smaller again. And then we look at stocks and usage and that bean number. Yikes. That's really small now, and it looked like to me, while the number, the 140 million bushels earlier in the week was within pretty close to what the market I thought was looking for, the reaction was very stellar. So I think the market really bought the fact this time that, hey, there wasn't a negative surprise. This is for real. This is tight. It's a little bit of time yet before the Southern Hemisphere crop is available and into the pipeline, and for right now we're exporting, and I would make the argument that the bounce back in export sales this week along with another announced sale earlier in the week, it doesn't seem like the market's really done its job of rationing the supply yet And I wouldn't read too much in today. It looked to me like in front of a three-day weekend, we probably saw a little profit taking.
Yeah. I don't the reports that we got on Tuesday, number one, we've been talking about it. Farmers are extremely frustrated by some of the numbers that came out and why it took so long to get to these numbers. Number two, it's making it more difficult to go ahead and pull the trigger on some of the new crop marketings, even though we're sitting here at 460 in the Dease and 12 bucks in the Nove. Talk me through it, Brian. Get me started. Convince me that it's okay to go ahead and get started on 2021 crop corn and soybean marketings.
I'll put my disclaimer out there. This is, again, Brian Doherty's opinion and 2 cents worth. But on the first, you call the number, but I tell producers or encourage producers to think along the lines, the first 15 to 30, realistically about the first third of your crop, when the opportunity presents value sales. And value sales, in my mind, are sales that almost no matter what, you can live with. And so there's some criteria. One, is it likely profitable? If it is, we need to look at it. Two, you hope your first sales are your worst sales. We all know this story. In a lot of years, those first sales are it. The market tips over and it doesn't look back. Thirdly, we do have competition out of the Southern Hemisphere. So we do have weather markets that are more important than ever right now. Today, I would argue the weather has been more supportive than not, but that can change. So I like looking at, goodness, $12 beans and $4.50, $4.60 board price on corn. Some way, somehow, let's try and make a mistake. Let's get something started. And there's two criteria there. One is find out what strategy works best for you, whether it's a hedge to rye if you don't like the basis or you just prefer the forward contract or hedge with an advisor. Something that gets the ball rolling for you, and two, really think about balance. So if you do start making some sales, don't worry about fretting over those initial sales. Leave room to make more, average up, and then at that point you might look at even starting to purchase put options. But the idea of getting the ball rolling and started, the lesson learned the last several years, and this year could be different, but when things tip over, it's just unforgiving. The market drops so fast and so hard, it's hard to catch that falling knife.
Right. And the balance comments. I've kind of been on that theme this week, Brian, and I think it is so important that you keep everything in balance as we go forward. Great stuff. We're going to talk livestock, get into a little bit of dairy. Brian Doherty next. It's time for headlines featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Current Argentine rains are key ahead of a, quote, lengthy period of dryness and an increase in crop stress, unquote. Arctic blast is expected for the Black Sea region, but snow should prevent winter kelp. Ukraine's grain shipments remain well behind year ago. Biden officially proposes a $1.9 trillion American rescue plan for the first. It's the first of two parts of a plan. Will restaurants and bars be part of USDA Commodity Credit Corporation funding? And India hopes to reach E20 gasoline blends by 2025. Where'd they get this newfangled technology in their automobiles that can handle a blend all the way up to 20% ethanol in their fuel supply? I just don't understand how they can do that. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Breaker, 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 breaker. We got Brian Doherty trucking on down the road with AgriTalk, AgriTalk up.
I knew if I waited, you'd do that.
That's big 10-4 there, Chip.
This is Texas size 10-4 there, Davis. That's what that is. Texas size
10-4. Texas 10-4.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're talking to Brian Doherty.
Yes,
and before we get back to Brian, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, March HRW wheat was 6.5 cents higher, 6.43. March soft red gained 5.5 cents to close at 6.75 and one half. March corn futures 2¾ lower today, 531.5. May corn off 3 cents, 534.75. March soybean futures 13¾ cents lower on the day, 14.16¾. May beans fell 13 cents to 14.14¾. March cotton 45 points lower, 80.70. Livestocks, Feb live cattle 70 cents higher, 112.77½. March feeder cattle 245 higher, 135.82½. And February lean hogs, 162.5 higher, 67.92½ all told.
Yep.
That's your quick market recap. Back to you, good buddy.
February live cattle on the week were down $1.70. March feeder cattle were down $1. Now they were 265 higher today?
245 higher.
245 today. Higher. Yep. 245 higher.
That's right.
So at one point they were $3.50 lower on the week before they started to come back. So, you know, it was a nice move here to wrap up the week. February lean hogs on the week down 77.5 cents. Okay, let's get back to Brian Doherty. Brian, during the break there, I was thinking, you know, corn for the last 2 days this week was given kind of a tough job because of all the uncertainty over that, the RFS, SRE, the ethanol news that was – it felt like it could only be disappointing for ethanol and for corn. So, on a whole, how do you think the corn market did this week?
I think it did great. Let's just kind of back up into the report and the report on the surface, 150 million bushel decline in carryout. So a couple of things to look at there. Boy, dropping that yield the way that it did, and then these other line item changes. So when you look at things like exports, USDA lowered export projections. Now, my guess is early enough in the year like it is, we're only into now starting our fifth month of the marketing year, they looked at this and used probably some sort of equation that higher prices equal less quantity demanded. That's a basic economic principle.
Right.
And you could certainly see if Brazil has a big second crop corn, maybe these exports slow considerably. Yet the export pace is running well above on a weekly basis what's needed to meet the USDA projections.
Yep.
So when I look at this, I look at that and the way the market behaved, I think the market kind of dismissed those reductions in exports and agreed with the yield number. And my bias on that is as we talked to producers throughout the entire harvest, there were periods where yield was good and it was off good. But the whole second half of harvest, I will tell you that farmers, it was almost verbatim when you talked to them, Chip, they said, hey, we're not complaining, but our yield is about 5% less than what we thought it was going to be.
Yep.
And lo and behold, you start the yield projections, USDA at 184, come in at 172, you're about 6% less.
Yep.
So that seems to make some sense to me on the yield number. What doesn't make sense to me is this year's crop is 172 bushels, and last year's was 168 or 167.5 or whatever it was. You talked about frustration with farmers. You don't want to be at the Iowa Par Farm Show in January after the USDA doesn't lower yield. There was some anger and visceral concern that the system's broke.
Yep.
So at least this year we have some higher prices to work with. But there was a full belief that due to quality issues and due to test weight and due to just lower yield that there was just an overshoot last year for whatever reasons. And subsequently it finally caught up to the market, even though the cash market was telling us something much different last December, January, February, basis levels really started to percolate. So I'm not sure where I'm going with this other than to say it does look like these revisions over the last several months, they've aligned friendly, but they're probably aligned more with, let's say true vision of what last year's crop was, which was, in my opinion, 3 to 5 bushels higher than the USDA, and that's not taking into account test weight. And when you start looking at that, that's how you get down from a 3.2 billion carryout down to about a 1.5.
Right, right. You know, about, probably 5 or 6 months ago, a column that I wrote for Farm Journal, Brian, talked about how USDA had become very reactive, and I'm talking specifically about the World Board. Reactive. They wanted to see proof of a trend rather than predicting that something would happen in the supply and demand tables. I think you're exactly right. There's a bit of predictiveness in the latest set of numbers with the expectations that the rising price will slow down that demand. So I don't know if we're seeing another transition at the World Board in attitude that they need to get a little bit more predictive and less reactive, or what's going on. But this is a predictive set of numbers, I think.
It appears that way, and I'm not defending them or throwing them under the bus. I think it's just the way that it is. I just think there's a sense of frustration that perhaps the methodology, when they take into account certain things, seems to be sort of archaic and slow, and it takes a long time to catch up to some of the things that I want to say. You know, we get a zillion bits of information from farmers. We get good feedback. We get a good feel that last year's sort of wave of what I heard from producers and what the USDA was suggesting, there was a disconnect there. Not to say the producer was right, but there was a trend, and it looks like it kind of caught up to the market this year. At the same time, exports started to pick up. At the same time, you had the windstorm. At the same time, that beans started to take off, and basis started to pop. And I think the reality was, as corn harvest was getting underway, we're hearing from our farmers in the southern regions of the Corn Belt saying, hey, I've got really good yield, and we got good crops, but the elevators are calling us. They're begging for corn. They're out of corn.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, where was it? Well, they just don't have it, or they need to blend it with some lesser quality corn. And that seemed to be the trend right through harvest.
Right. Hey, just so that everybody knows, as we talk about some of these questions about the supply-side numbers that we get from the National Ag Statistics Service, we're going to have Lance Honig on the show on Tuesday morning to talk about and ask some of these questions that Brian is asking. And I've got the same questions. And, Brian, farmers have already sent me a long list of questions that they want me to ask Lance when he's on the show on Tuesday. So we'll have to do a little sorting and picking, but we'll get to the bottom line there. What do you like in the livestock market right now, Brian?
Well, let's kind of start with just kind of the hog picture. We think through the euthanasia and issues that occurred with COVID that there's kind of a loophole where supplies could get a little tighter into maybe the end of the first quarter here, second quarter. And so I like that. However, I'm not a raging bull. I think China has rapidly built their herd back up, and that's good for potential grain exports, but not necessarily for pork exports down the road. So I think there's some potential there. Cattle, I'm going to say probably the same argument. It's tough to be a bear in cattle right now. I think when you look at the drought monitor map and you look what happened last summer with packing delays and backups, that if a cow didn't take or a heifer isn't just right, I think she was gone. Yep. So I want to stay with more of a friendlier bias in the cattle market. And the board had some good recovery today, despite generally weaker cash. I just think this whole COVID thing has got everybody sort of wishy-washy in what way they really want to be in this cattle industry, and not sure that if I'm going to call it the shadow demand market, and that is the private sources of beef. You know, what voids that field, and whether that's going away or remaining strong, I think that has remained strong and actually probably reduced some of the supply, and that's part of the bigger term supportive. But we have the perception that we're not opening up restaurants fast enough, that people aren't buying. That doesn't help that doesn't instill confidence for traders to buy into strength.
Right. Yeah, that shadow demand. I like that description. I'm going to use that going forward. I like that a lot. Good one. March class 3 milk futures got back on top of $19 for the close today. Do you like that market?
I'm going to go back to sort of Davis's sort of reflection on what was it? A bunch of basketballs falling out of the rafters and trying to
ping pong balls.
Ping pong balls. Yeah, ping pong balls.
That's. Throw $400 million at the dairy industry or the dairy market and the fifth round of product purchasing, and when and how all this takes place. But it looks like, support for cheese. It looks like support for butter. Good for the food nutrition program. Good for consumers. Does it last? Counter that with, the dairy industry is notorious and famous for when you have higher prices, you create more production. And that's the counterbalance on that on that idea of I think being outright friendly. I don't think we see a repeat of the kind of numbers we saw earlier in the year. I'd like to make the argument that we can run $18, $19 milk in the first quarter, second quarter possibly, and after that, you look out into, let's say, August through the end of the year, and you got 17s in front. Those are very respectable prices. The wild card is feed. If we really run tight on feed and we drive corn prices higher, then we drive milk higher. Then I think corn leads milk. Right now, I think it's supported milk, but I'm not sure it's leading milk right now.
Gotcha.
I don't think enough dairy producers have said, look, I got to panic and get rid of cows because corn prices are high in December here, but it's certainly grabbed their attention.
Gotcha. Great conversation, Brian. Thank you so much, man. You have a great weekend.
Very thankful and appreciate that, and please stay safe.
You bet. Thank you so much. That's Brian Daugherty, Total Farm Marketing.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Dude, I know what's been on a lot of people's minds this week.
Oh, do you?
Yes. And that would be, where in the heck did those numbers come from on Tuesday from USDA? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we're, as I mentioned, talking to Brian, we're going to have a conversation about the supply side numbers with Lance Honig on Tuesday. He's in charge of the crops numbers at the National Ag Statistics Service. That's the quarterly grain stocks report. That's the annual production summary that was released on Tuesday. There were revisions to the September 1 stocks numbers for corn. Took 76 million bushels off of that, but that 76 million bushel reduction also was after another revision to the June 1 stocks numbers. So when we start seeing things like that, you got to wonder, what did they uncover that needed to be fixed? And when we have a conversation with Lance, it is not going to be, geez, man, you had that all screwed up. It's going to be, what were we fixing by doing this? What needed to be fixed? What did you discover that needed to be fixed? How did we discover that? The idea that there is some grand scheme inside of USDA to prevent accurate data from getting out to the marketplace in a timely fashion, that's just crap. There's no grand scheme that is going to happen. It's a tough job. It is a tough damn job, and I've said that many, many times. Now, with that said, I will also say that with what happened with their cotton yield estimate, remember a month back, the move from November to December was huge, and they took another 25 pounds off the national average cotton yield December to January. These are moves that should have been telegraphed earlier, much earlier than what they were through the NAS surveys. So I want to find out from Lance, why? Is there something wrong with the process now? What happened with the process that it's taking longer to identify some of these big sweeping changes? I'll start with the cotton with Lance, because those numbers, as you know, Davis, it just blew me away when we got that change in December.
Yes. Yep.
And we had another change from December to January. But that stocks number two, it leaves a lot of questions, especially with the revisions. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that conversation. And I believe me, I know Lance. I know some of the other guys there at NAS. They are working to deliver the best information that they can on the most timely basis that they can. And they're good people. They are. They're good people. But I think they're dealing with some they've got to be dealing with. You know what? Here, now this goes back a few more years.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was running the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, we were using a yield calculation that was developed by the Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois corn growers back in the 70s. Okay. And one of the things that it did was it attempted to adjust for kernel size based on the number of kernel rows around the ear.
Oh.
And over time, that kernel size adjustment kept getting wider and wider and wider. So our yield estimate was not keeping up with advancements in genetics, with advancements in technology that was keeping a healthier plant out there and adding more weight per kernel. So it was tough to make that adjustment for kernel size just simply based on the number of kernel rows around the ear.
Sure.
So in 2005, I went back in 2005? Was it that long ago already? It might have been. No, it wasn't that long ago. Must have been 2010. I back tested the thing all the way back as far as I could go and just took the adjustment out. And what that did was it showed that 20 years ago, the unadjusted number was too high. But over time, it got closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to accurate, where now we feel like that unadjusted number, when we put all 1,500 samples into one spreadsheet and pull one average corn yield, we feel like that's going to be a pretty good number. It's going to tell us something. So we made the change. We reworked a bit of history. We did it completely transparently, and we made the change in how everything was done. So I shouldn't say how everything was done, because we continued to use the same process and the same data points, just a different calculation. But we were completely transparent when we made that adjustment and put it out there for everybody to see exactly how we did it. I wonder if we're experiencing something like that. I wonder if we are.
Transparency is the key in a deal like that. And I feel like Mr. Honig is not only expressing a willingness to do that, but also very brave to come on and to discuss these matters. Because
he knows, you know, people
there
are
those who
PO'd
who would ask difficult questions, perhaps even unpleasant questions. But he's putting himself out there, so I think we need to honor him for that and be absolutely grateful and respectful.
Yep, that's right. Davis, the markets are closed on Monday. So is the government.
I noticed.
Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and a very important day in the history of our nation, to a very important man to celebrate, I should say. And so find a way. Find a way to honor Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday. We've got a show for you. Monday morning, Machinery Pete. We've got House Ag Chairman Congressman David Scott coming out of Georgia, and Millennial Farmer Zach Johnson is going to be on Monday morning. Monday afternoon, Steve Nicholson from Rabo AgriFinance. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks to Acuron on Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.